An alien hand. Tillu, how often have you been told not to go that way? But why does Daddy go there every day? Because that's his job, Tillu. That way was an underground passage. Tillu's father went every day for work along that passage, and every day he came back from that direction. What lay at the end of that forbidden route? Not only Tillu, but a great majority of the community would have liked to know. Tillu's father was one of the select few permitted to go that way. The above conversation invariably took place between Tillu and his mother whenever he insisted on following his father. Today, however, was different. Tillu's father was enjoying a siesta at home, and Tillu managed to get hold of his security card. Then, evading his watchful mother's eye, Tillu made his way to the forbidden passage. A metal door barred his entry, but Tillu had watched his father slip the magic card into a slot. He did the same, and the door opened noiselessly. A well-lit passage seemed to beckon him. Snatching the card, which had come out of another slot in the wall, Tillu started his march along a gentle upward slope, for the passage led from the underground habitat to the surface of the planet. Tillu looked forward to seeing the sun or the stars about which he had heard and read so much. But alas, that wasn't to be. Tillu had underestimated the security arrangements. Invisible mechanical devices had already detected and photographed the small intruder, sent his picture to the central bureau, where it was thoroughly checked, and before he had advanced 10 paces, a strong hand fell heavily on his shoulder. Gently but firmly, he was escorted by the security staff back home to an anxious and angry mother. While he was being scolded, he received help from an unexpected quarter. "Let me explain to him, darling," said his father, who had just got up. "If he is properly briefed, he will not do such a thing again," he started to explain. "Listen, Tillu, I work on a surface where an ordinary person cannot survive because the air is too thin to breathe, and where the temperature is so low that you would freeze to death. But, Daddy, how do you manage to survive? Because I go well equipped in a special suit with a reservoir of oxygen. I can keep warm, and my boots are specially designed to make it easy for me to walk on the surface. What's more, I've been trained to survive and work on the surface. There was a time when our forefathers lived on the surface quite naturally. Indeed, they did so for millions of years. But times changed. The very sun which had provided us with sustenance turned hostile. It changed only slightly, but the change was sufficient to upset the balance of nature on this planet. First, the birds became extinct. The animals followed. The fish couldn't bear it any more either. We managed to survive only because of our superior technology. But we were forced to live underground, under artificial conditions thanks to solar energy. We can generate sufficient power to make our life comfortable. But the machines which make this possible must always be in good working condition. Some of them are on the surface. I belong to the team whose responsibility it is to keep watch on them and to service them. Daddy, can I join the team when I grow up? Of course, if you want to, said his father. But for that, you must be a good boy and do as your parents tell you. His mother had, as usual, the last word. Next day, when Tillu's father went to work, he found the control room full of excitement. People were crowded round the big TV screen. It showed a dot in an otherwise clear background. It isn't a star, for it's changing its position. Our computer has given a trajectory for this thing. It's heading towards us. The supervisor of the last shift explained. A spacecraft? Tillu's father asked. By now, he was joined by his teammates on the new shift. So we think, but it needs watching. A spacecraft? Where from? The solar system wasn't known to have any life anywhere else except on their planet. Tillu's father recalled the ancient days recorded in the archives at the Central Bureau when their ancestors had a well-developed space program and had searched the solar system with manned and unmanned spacecraft and found that they were indeed alone. Now, in the days of energy shortage and underground life, they had no space program. They could only watch importantly from their vantage point. Who were these strangers? The conference room in the Central Bureau was so quiet that an outsider would have thought it was empty. Far from it. It was full to capacity, but the members of the Central Committee were unusually quiet. They knew that the President was going to make a momentous announcement. Colleagues, I will give you the report as I have it. While I speak there, maybe a change in the situation. The President paused to get his papers in order and then continued. Two spacecraft are approaching us. One is, in fact, orbiting our planet, while the other is still far away. We guess that they are coming from our neighboring planet. How should we react? Number one, your views, please. Number one was in charge of defense. He was known for his courage and wisdom. Sir, if we wish, we can totally destroy these spacecraft with our missiles. But that won't make us any wiser. We do not have the capacity to render these craft unoperational in space. But should they land, we can render them ineffective any time we choose. Our reports say that they do not contain living beings. They only have instruments. Number two, your opinion, please. The President asked the scientist on the committee. I recommend non-interference and passive observation. Since we do not know the power of the senders of these spacecraft, and we are still in the dark about their intentions, it is wise not to reveal our existence. If we destroy these spaceships or render them ineffective, we might reveal our existence. The President looked at number three, a social scientist. He rarely agreed with number two, but this was one of those rare occasions when he did. I agree with number two, sir. In fact, I will go so far as to say that we should keep our surface activities to the minimum, thus creating the impression that there's no life on this planet. Fortunately, our surface conditions do give that impression. Before the president could speak, his personal telephone rang. He lifted the receiver and listened quietly for a minute. "Colleagues," he announced, "the first spacecraft has landed. Thank you."